Chapter 18. Go down into the country to fetch it. Nay, the trade grew so hot, that of a sudden, as if no other business was in hand, all people were upon it, and the whole market was changed from selling of bearskins, to buying of feathers. Some gave this for a reason, why all the stocks of the societies fell so fast, but there were other reasons, to be given for that, such as clubs, cabals, stock jobbers, knights, merchants, and thies, I mean a private sort, not such as are frequently hanged there, but of a worse sort, by how much they merit that punishment more, but are out of the reach of the law, can rob and pickpockets in the face of the sun, and laugh at the families they ruin, bidding defiance to all legal resentment. To this height things were come under the growing evil of this sort of people. And yet in the very moon where, as I have noted, the people are so exceeding clear-sighted, and have such vast helps to their perceptive faculties, such mists are sometimes cast before the public understanding, that they cannot see the general interest. This was manifest, in that just as I came away from that country, the great council of their wise men, the men of the feather, were a-going to repeal the old law of restraining the number of these people, and so as it was, there was not employment for half of them, there being 100 in all, and not above 5 honest ones, yet when I came away they were going to increase their number. I have nothing to say to this here, only that all wise men, that understand trade were very much concerned at it, and looked upon it as a most destructive thing to the public, and foreboding the same mischiefs, that trade suffered before. It was a particular misfortune to these lunar people, that this country had a better stock of governors in all articles of their welfare, than in their trade. Their law fairs had good judges, their church good patriarchs, except, as might be accepted, their state good ministers, their army good generals, and their consolidator good feathers. But in matters relating to trade, they had this particular misfortune, that those cases always came before people that did not understand them. Even the judges themselves were often found at a loss to determine causes of negus, such as protests, charter parties, averages, barratry, demurrage of ships, right of detaining vessels on demurrage, and the like. Nay, the very laws themselves are fain to be silent, and yield in many things a superiority to the custom of merchants. And here I began to congratulate my native country, where the prudence of the government has provided for these things, by establishing in a commission of trade some of the most experienced gentlemen in the nation, to regulate, settle, improve, and revive trade in general, by their unwearied labors, and most consummate understanding. And this made me pity these countries, and think it would be an action worthy of this nation, and be spoken of for ages, to come to their glory, if in mere charity they would appoint or depute these gentlemen, to go a voyage to those countries of the moon, and bless those regions with the schemes of their sublime undertakings, and discoveries in trade. But when I was expressing myself thus, my philosopher interrupted me, and told me I should see they were already furnished for that purpose, when I came to examine the public libraries, of which I itself. But I was farther confirmed in my observation of the weakness of the public heads of that country, as to trade, when I saw another most preposterous law going forward among them, the title of which was specious, and contained something relating to employing the poor, but the substance of it absolutely destructive to the very nature of their trade, tending to transposing, confounding, and destroying their manufactures, and to the ruin of all their home commerce. Never was nation so blind to their own interest as these Lunarian lawmakers, and the people who were the contrivers of this law were so vainly conceited, so fond of the gilded title, and so positively dogmatic, that they would not hear the frequent applications of persons better acquainted with those things than themselves, but pushed it on merely by the strength of their party, for the vanity of being authors of such a contrivance. But to return to the new model of the Crowleans. The advice of the Linnaean philosopher run now throw all their affairs, unite was the word throw all the nation, in trade, in cash, in stocks, as I noted before. If a Salinarian ship was bound to any outport, no Crowleian would load any goods aboard. If any ship came to seek freight abroad, none of the Crowleian's correspondents would ship anything, unless they knew the owners were Crowleians. The Crowleian merchants turned out all their Salinarian masters, sailors, and captains from their ships. And thus, as the Salinarians would have them be separated in respect of the government, profits, honors, and offices, they resolved to separate in everything else too, and to stand by themselves. At last, upon some public occasion, the public treasurers of the land sent to the capital city, to borrow 500,000 linarians upon very good security of established funds. Truly nobody would lend any money, or at least they could not raise above a fifth part of that sum, inquiring at the bank, at their general society's cash, and other places, all was languid and dull, and no money to be had. But being informed, that the Crowleans had erected a bank of their own, they sent thither, and were answered readily, that whatever sum the government wanted, was at their service, only it was to be lent not by particular persons, but such a grandee being one of the prime nobility, and who the Crowleans now call it their protector, was to be treated with about it. The government saw no harm in all this. Here was no law broken, here was nothing but oppression answered with policy, and mischief fenced against with reason. The government therefore took no notice of it, nor made any scruple, when they wanted any money to treat with this nobleman, and borrow any sum of the Crowleans, as Crowleans. On the contrary, in the name of the Crowleans, their head or protector presented their addresses and petitions, procured favors on one hand, and assistance on the other, and thus by degrees and insensibly the Crowleans became a politic body, settled and established by orders and rules among themselves. And while a spirit of unanimity thus run through all their proceedings, their enemies could never hurt them, their princes always saw it was their interest to keep measures with them, and they were sure to have justice upon any complaint whatsoever. When I saw this, it forced me to reflect upon affairs in our own country. Well, said I, 'tis happy for England, that our dissenters have not this spirit of union and largeness of heart among them. For if they were not a narrow, mean-spirited, short-sighted, self-preserving, friend-betraying, poor-neglecting people, they might hop in every way as safe, as considerable, as regarded and as numerous as the Crowleans in the moon. But it is not in their souls to do themselves good, nor to espouse, or stand by those that would do it for them. And 'tis well for the churchmen, that it is so, for many attempts have been made to save them, but their own narrowness of soul, and dividedness in interest has always prevented its being effectual, and discouraged all the instruments, that ever attempted to serve them. 'Tis confessed the case was thus at first among the Crowleans. They were full of divisions among themselves, as I have noted already of the Salinarians, and the unhappy feuds among them had always not only exposed them to the censure, reproach, and banter of their Salinarian enemies, but it had served to keep them under, prevent their being valued in the government, and given the other party vast advantages against. But the Salinarians driving thus furiously at their destruction and entire ruin, opened their eyes to the following measures for their preservation. And here again the high Salinarians may see, and doubtless whenever they made use of the lunar glasses they must see it, that nothing could have driven the Crowleans to make use of such methods for their defense, but the rash proceedings of their own warm men, in order to suppressing the whole Crowleian interest. and this might inform our countrymen of the Church of England, that it cannot but be their interest to treat their brethren with moderation and temper, lest their extravagances should one time or other drive the other as it were by force into their senses, and open their eyes, to do only all those things which by law they may do, and which they are laughed at by all the world for not doing. This was the very case in the moon. The philosopher, or pretended such as before, had often published that it was their interest to unite, but their eyes not being open to the true causes and necessity of it, their ears were shut against the council, till oppression and necessities drove them to it. Accordingly they entered into a serious debate of the state of their own affairs, and finding the advice given very reasonable, they set about it, and the author gave them a model, entitled an enquiry into what the Crowleans may lawfully do to prevent the certain ruin of their interest, and bring their enemies to peace. I will not pretend to examine the contents of this sublime tract, but from this very day, we found the Crowleans in the moon, acting quite on a different foot from all their former conduct, putting on a new temper, and a new face, as you have heard. All this while the Hotzollianarians cried out plots, associations, confederacies, and rebellions, when indeed here was nothing done, but what the laws justified, what reason directed, and what at the Crowleans, but made use of the cogitator, they would have done 40 years before. The truth is, the other people had no remedy, but to cry murther, and make a noise. For the Crowleans went on with their affairs, and established themselves so, that when I came away, they were become a most solid, and well united body, made a considerable figure in the nation, and yet the government was easy. For the Solianarians found, when they had attained the utmost end of their wishes, her Solianarian majesty was as safe as before, and the Crowleans' property being secured, they were as loyal subjects as the Solianarians, as consistent with monarchy, as useful to it, and as pleased with it. I cannot but remark here, that this union of the Crowleans among themselves had another consequence, which made it appear it was not only to their own advantage, but to the general good of all the nation. For, by little and little, the feuds of the parties cooled, and the Solianarians began to be better reconciled to them, the government was easy and safe, and the private quarrels, as I have been told since, begin to be quite forgot. What blindness, said I to myself, has possessed the dissenters in our unhappy country of England, whereby eternal discords, feuds, distrusts, and disgusts among themselves, they always fill their enemies with hopes, that by pushing at them, they may one time or other complete their ruin, which expectation has always served as a means to keep open the quarrel, whereas had the dissenters been united in interest, affection, and management among themselves, all this heat had long ago been over, and the nation, though there had been two opinions, had retained but one interest, been joined in affection, and peace at home, been raised up to that degree that all wise men wish, as it is now among the inhabitants of the world in the moon. 'Tis true, in all the observations I made in this lunar country, the vast deference paid to the persons of princes began to lessen, and whatever respect they had for the office, they found it necessary frequently to tell the world that on occasion they could treat them with less respect than they pretended to owe them. For about this time, the divine right of kings, and the inheritances of princes in the moon, met with a terrible shock, and that by the Solianarian party themselves, and insomuch that even my philosopher, and he was none of the jure divino men, neither declared against it. They made crowns perfect footballs, set up what kings they would, and pull it down such as they did not like, radish in voluntas, right or wrong, as they thought best, of which some examples shall be given by and by. After I had thus enquired into the historical affairs of this lunar nation, which for its similitude to my native country, I could not but be inquisitive in, I wanted a great many material things, which at least I cannot enter upon the relation of here, and began to inquire into their affairs abroad. I think I took notice in the beginning of my account of these parts, that I found the Mengagat in a tedious and bloody war, with one of the most mighty monarchs of all the moon. I must therefore hint, that among the multitude of things, which for brevity's sake I omit, the reader may observe these were some. 1. That this was the same monarch who harbored and entertained the Abragratzian prince, who was fled as before, and who we are to call the king of Gallienaria. 2. I have omitted the account of a long and bloody war, which lasted a great many years, and which the present queen's predecessor, managed with a great deal of bravery and conduct, and finished very much to his own glory, and the nation's advantage. 3. I have too much omitted to note, how barbarously the high Solianarian churchmen treated him for all his services, upbraided him with the expense of the war, and though he saved them all from ruin and Abragratzianism, yet had not one good word for him, and indeed 'tis with some difficulty, that I pass this over, because it might be necessary to observe, besides what is said before, that ingratitude is a vice in nature, and practice it everywhere, as well as in England. So that we need not upbraid the party among us with their ill treatment of the late king, for these people assert their good king every jot as bad, till their unkindness perfectly broke his heart. Here also I am obligated to omit the historical part of the war, and of the peace that followed. Only I must observe, that this peace was very precarious, short and unhappy, and in a few months the war broke out again, with as much fury as ever. And this war happened one of the strangest, unaccountable and most preposterous actions, that ever a people in their national capacity could be guilty of. Certainly if our people in England, who pretend that kingship is jure divino, did but know the story of which I speak, they would be quite of another mind. Wherefore I crave leave, to relate part of the history, or original of this last war, as a necessary introduction to the proper observations I shall make upon it. There was a king of a certain country in the moon, call it in their language, Ebronia, who was formerly a confederate with the Solianarians. This prince dying without issue, the great monarch we speak of, seized upon all his dominions as his right. So if I remember right, he had formerly sworn never to lay claim to it, and after that by a subsequent treaty, had agreed with the Solianarian prince, that another monarch who claimed a right as well as he, should divide it between them. The breach of this agreement, and seizing this kingdom, put almost all the lunar world into a flame, and war hung over the heads of all the northern nations of the moon, for several claims were made to the succession by other princes, and particularly by a certain Piant prince called the Eagle, of an ancient family, whose lunar name I cannot well express, but in English it signifies the men of the great lip. Whether it was originally a sort of a nickname, or whether they had any such thing as a great lip hereditary to the family, by which they were distinguished, is not worth my while to examine. 'Tis without question, that the successive right, if their lunar successions, are governed as ours are in this world, devolved upon this man with the lip and his families. But the Gallienarian monarch brought things so to pass, by his extraordinary conduct, that the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.